Hello, 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 everyone. This is Rob Wolf. Welcome to episode 90 of Unfermettable, where we take a look back at some of the less heralded myths in our beloved franchise's quirky history, because to us, everyone who dons the orange and blue is in some way unfermettable. Well, upon filming this, I just this weekend watched Carlos Carrasco rack up his 100th career win while donning a Mets uniform. And they were talking a little bit about it during the game as well, and it did get me thinking about Mets who had won 100 games, both, you know, just in toto for the franchise, but also just wearing the uniform. And, you know, even as they talked about it during Carrasco's game, it always did inordinately bother me that Ron Darling only got to 99 as a Met. It just seemed wrong. It seemed like he deserved that one extra one in orange and blue and not a random win as an expo. But a milestone's a milestone for a major leaguer, and it's quite an accomplishment to win that many games. Unsurprisingly to me, I noticed that the fine writers and Met historians over at Faith and Fear in Flushing had an article about Mets who had won their 100th as a Met, you know, of course, first mentioning the greats like Gooden, Seaver, and Kuzman, who did it all. Those who came close to getting all from 1 to 100 in a Met uniform, like Ronnie and Sid, and then went on to look at players like Cookie, who arrived here later in their careers and wound up earning 100 as a Met. I mean, I personally love Cookie, and I get the sense that most Met fans do. It's kind of hard not to like him as a person, everything he's gone through and overcome. Seeing him win his 100th was just a legitimately happy moment, you know, to celebrate, even if he hasn't been a Met for incredibly long. Just like I'll probably celebrate Max Scherzer's 200th win about as wildly as if more than 10 of them would have come as a Met when it finally transpires. But it doesn't always work out that way. I think most Met fans I knew back then couldn't have been less enthused about the carpetbagging Tom Glavine's 300th win. A lack of enthusiasm, which was whatever the opposite of rewarded is, on the last day of the 2007 season. At any rate, one of the more interesting names on the list of players to win 100 or get win number 100 in a Met uniform was a pitcher who was a popular player with Met fans and his Met teammates. So popular, he was happy to come back and end his career with the Mets in his sunshine days. He served as a lefty swingman for the Mets in the early 70s, a valuable complement to Tug McGraw in the bullpen when he wasn't starting. Here's the baseball and Mets career and 100th win of the unfermettable Ray Sadecki. Raymond Michael Sadecki was born on December 26th, 1940, in Kansas City, Kansas. His dad spent his childhood working in a grocery store, though he wished he could play baseball. So he stated in interviews that his greatest wish for his son Ray was for him to be left-handed, to like baseball, and to become a major leaguer. So it was check, check, and check for Sadecki's dad, as young Ray loved baseball, took to it, and began to garner serious attention from scouts at Ward High School in Kansas City. At the age of 17, Sadecki would sign right out of high school with the St. Louis Cardinals, got a $50,000 bonus, which I don't know, but sounds pretty high for those days, and an $18,000 contract for his first three seasons. Sadecki tore through the minors pretty quickly, spending only 58 and 59 there, and making a few starts in AAA in early 1960 before making his MLB debut at the tender age of 19. For reference, he was exactly 2 days older than the one and only Doc Gooden when he made his major league debut. And there were growing pains. His first five appearances were very rough, as indicated by his MLB debut, where he went only 2 2/3 innings, surrendering eight hits, five runs. Only two of them earned, though. It took until his sixth major league start on June 15th of 1960 for Sadecki to record his first major league win, and he did it in style, a three-hit shutout of the Cincinnati Reds. He was supported in the game by another young Cardinal, Curt Flood, who hit two home runs, and that shutout really showcased both Sadecki's greatest strength, a dazzling fastball that wowed his manager and his scouts, and he struck out 9 in the shutout, but also his biggest pitching drawback, his control, as Sadecki would walk 8 in the shutout as well. The Cardinals were very young that year. The core of the 60s team that would be a perennial championship contender and win a couple of titles was just forming, so they stuck with the young pitcher's growing pains as he went 9-9, and he, in interviews, would recall that as an ideal situation for him. As he said, the Cardinals were in 4th or 5th place in 1960 in an 8-team league. The fact was, we weren't going anywhere. They gave me the ball, and I got to pitch. I struggled through a 9-9 year, but it was enough to get my feet wet. 1960 was a big year in many ways for someone who was clearly an early bloomer or mature for his age or something, as Sadecki, at the All-Star break, married his high school sweetheart, Diane Rush, on July 13th, 1960. So yes, he was 19 at the time of his MLB debut and 19 at the time of his marriage, which I would like to be snarky about, but then I'd be being snarky about my parents, who were 19 and 20 when they got married, so just what was done a little more often back then, I guess. At any rate, that young Cardinal core blossomed. Many names people have heard of, such as Bob Gibson, Kurt Flood, Tim McCarver. Sadecki was considered part of that core, but he was very up and down. He had a really strong first full season in 1961, going 14-10 with a 3.72 ERA. And Sadecki would hold out for more money prior to the 62 season, and unfortunately would struggle very badly in 62. He'd go 6-8 with a 5.54 ERA. And then fairly or not, and knowing the way baseball organizations work, probably unfairly, Sadecki got kind of branded as a malcontent and someone who didn't put out a lot of effort by the Cardinals organization in 62. Perhaps the holdout had something to do with it. What do you think? Strange to see a Caucasian player get branded as a malcontent, but I guess it happens once in a while. At any rate, after a June 5th game against the Reds in which he didn't retire a batter, Cardinal manager Johnny Keene called Sadecki's performance, quote, "the poorest exhibition of effort I've ever seen on a major league diamond." Sadecki was a bit offended by, you know, as you could imagine, by that, showed up late for the next game, which earned him a suspension, and as he continued to struggle, a trip back down to AAA. Still, I guess people don't give up on talented lefties too easily, so Sadecki showed moderate improvement in 1963, was almost traded to the Giants for Felipe Alou that offseason, but stuck around, which was good for him and good for the Cardinals, as both of them had excellent 1964s, Sadecki going 20-11 with a 3.68 ERA, and the Cardinals winning the National League pennant. Because the great Bob Gibson had pitched 3 times in 7 days down the stretch, it was actually Sadecki who got the Game 1 World Series assignment against none other than the chairman of the board, Whitey Ford. Sadecki would struggle, but would go 6 innings against a strong Yankee lineup, surrendering 4 runs, but the Cardinals would put up 4 in the bottom of the 6th off of Ford to give the young lefty a win in his World Series debut, a game in which he also delivered an RBI single in Game 1. And by the way, not an anomaly, Sadecki was a pretty good hitting pitcher, and that he had slash lines in 61 of 253, 261, 299, and most notably in 66, 341, 357, 634, yes, a 991 OPS with 3 homers and 7 RBIs on the entire season. And I know I was in the middle of talking about a World Series, but that can be interrupted when you're talking about pitchers hitting. And heck, it was a Cardinals-Yankees World Series. Do Met fans really strongly care which one of those teams wins? At any rate, Sadecki would get 1 more start in Game 4, but only go a third of an inning. He would get bailed out by Roger Craig, who would go 4 2/3 strong innings of relief as the Cards would rally in that game and eventually win the series, of course making Sadecki a world champion for the one and only time in his life, though he would sadly come oh so close again in 1973. Sadecki would kind of revert to struggling mode. He was pretty up and down with the Cardinals most of 65 and 66, and early in the 66 season, he got traded on May 8th of 66, to be exact, to the San Francisco Giants for Orlando Cepeda. Now, Cepeda had been a very popular giant and would kind of immediately star for the Cardinals, both in 66 and then even more so in 67 when he would win the National League's MVP that year. So when Sadecki struggled initially in San Francisco, going 3-7 with a 5.40 ERA in that half season in 66 in San Francisco, kind of darkened ended any hope I think he had of really fitting in or being popular with the Giants organization, or at least with the Giants fan base. He wound up having what were actually two of the best seasons of his career, definitely his two best seasons as a starter, according to WAR, Baseball Reference WAR, in 67 and 68, but was unappreciated and the victim of poor run support and probably the residue of the fact that Cepeda was starring across the country. To wit, Sadecki went 12-18 in 1968, though he had a 2.91 ERA and struck out a career-high 206 in 253 and two-thirds innings. He's even better than his numbers with a 2.34 FIP that year. And those 206 strikeouts were actually a Giants franchise record for a lefty that stood until Madison Bumgarner had 219 in 2014.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, "Hey folks, check your ticket. Somebody's got $16 million." And it was sort of this mystery. Why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, "For that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried."
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, "Oh, fingerprints. This is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house."
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
I can't think of any other, too many great Giants left-handers. I mean, I was just trying to think, but that is just a storied franchise and a lengthy franchise history, so somewhat of an impressive record to hold, even if the Christy Mathewsons and Juan Marichals were not left-handed. Sadecki would struggle again, though, in 1969 with the Giants, have some injury problems, and it was really the last season he'd start regularly. But he nevertheless would find a home, both as a spot starter slash bullpen arm, as well as figuratively find a home as a fan favorite and someone who seemed to mature into a veteran bullpen presence, as opposed to the young malcontent he was once rumored to be, in Flushing, Queens. As during the 69 offseason, the Giants would trade Sadecki along with Dave Marshall to the defending world champion New York Mets, for Jim Gosger and Bob Heise. The Mets hoped that Sadecki would bolster their bullpen, their pitching depth. Obviously, they were a defending champion that were based on strong, young pitching pretty heavily from the right side, aside from Kuz. So he wasn't going to be a rotation mainstay, necessarily. But as I guess was spoiled with the prelude to this podcast, he did arrive in New York with 99 career victories in tow. And Sadecki would make a couple of bullpen appearances for the 70 team before making a spot start on May 12th at Shea Stadium against Les Expos of Montreal and earning career victory number 100 with your typical quality start. 6 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 1 strikeout. Excuse me, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. But it would be enough in the Mets' victory, 8-4 victory over the Expos, to get Sadecki his 100th career victory. Don Cardwell, who had won his 100th career game the previous season in a Met uniform as the fourth starter for the world champion Mets, pitched an inning and two-thirds in relief before the man who had become Sadecki's longtime bullpen mate, Tug McGraw, would earn the save in Sadecki's 100th career win. The following year, 1971, would really be Sadecki's best major league season, at least by kind of advanced metrics. He wouldn't get to the 20 wins he'd get to with the powerful Cardinals team in 64, but the veteran would appear in 34 games, starting 20, pitching 166 innings, going 7-7 with a 2.92 ERA and a career-high 3.2 WAR, according to Baseball Reference. Ah, crap, I missed one. His actual second season in 1961, he had a WAR of 4, 222 innings in his second season. But yeah, even his 21 year was just good for 1.8 WAR, as he really did take advantage of a good team that year, and his peripherals were not as strong. But at any rate, he really was a consistent, reliable piece out of the Mets bullpen between 71 and 74, and a very key piece of the 73, you gotta believe, team. Between 71 and 74, Sadecki never had an ERA higher than 3.41, through over 100 innings in three of those four seasons, and was truly considered a, you know, beloved teammate, bullpen mentor, veteran presence guy, etc. Well, Sadecki would not appear in the 1973 NLCS against the Reds. He would make four huge appearances in the Mets' 1973 seven-game World Series defeat to the Oakland A's. In Game 2, with the Mets already trailing the series 1-0, the A's got to Jerry Kuzman early. They had a 3-2 lead in the top of the third inning, and loaded the bases against Kuzman with one out in the third. Sadecki came on and got out of a bases-loaded jam, retiring two batters in the bottom of the third and pitching a 1-2-3 fourth, kind of holding down the fort, striking out three in an inning and a two-thirds, perfect relief, keeping the Mets in a game that they would ultimately win 10-7 in 12 innings. Sadecki also pitched the ninth in Game 4, earning a save. He got a save in Game 4 of the World Series, though he had only one in his regular season Mets career. If I'm reading it right, though, I guess you could set up your own save situation back then, because Sadecki came into a 6-1 game in the top of the ninth and loaded the bases before striking out Bert Campaneras to end it, preserving the Mets' 6-1 lead and knotting the series back up at two games again. Sadecki would surrender his only run of the World Series in 4 2/3 innings in Game 7 of the series. He would come on in the bottom of the fifth with the Mets down 4-0 and surrender a run on a pair of singles, allowing the A's to extend their lead to 5-0. The Mets would get no closer to 5-2, as they would fall just short in their attempt at winning a second World Series in 5 years and interrupting the A's dynasty. Sadecki would continue to be a useful piece for the Mets in 74. Yogi Berra would kind of ping-ponging back and forth between the pen and starting. Tug McGraw struggled mightily in the first half of 74, so Sadecki went to the bullpen. Then later in the year, both George Stone and Craig Swan went on the DL with arm problems. And after being in the bullpen for virtually the whole year, Sadecki would respond with his first two starts in months. Well, he had one start August 1st in Game 2 of a doubleheader, but just his fourth start of the entire year, he would respond by throwing a complete game 5-hit shutout against the Braves on August 25th of 1974, a 1-0 victory in which he outdueled Phil Niekro. And he'd back that up with a second straight complete game 4-2 victory over the Braves on August 30th. Let me look at the box score. No, against Buzz Capra this time, not against Nuxi. In fact, he'd win four straight games as a starter before getting bombed in a start on September 14th, then throwing 8 innings in a no decision on September 20th of 1974 against the Pirates, a game the Mets would lose 4-3. Sadecki was actually in line for the win. Mets were up 3-1 going into the bottom of the ninth. He walked Art Howe to lead off, and then Tug McGraw came in and blew the save, costing Sadecki a win in what would ultimately be his final appearance in his first tenure as a New York Met. Despite all that value and flexibility, in the 74 offseason, the Mets would trade the popular Sadecki back to his original team, the Cardinals, in exchange for Joe Torre, The Mets, as I've covered in a previous Unformettable, Yogi in particular, was in love with young Randy Tate, another prospect called Hank Webb, and the Mets thought Sadecki was expendable and could use Torrey's aging veteran bat, and Sadecki was happy as he could be closer to his family. But this would kind of begin the journeyman phase of Sadecki's career. He was with St. Louis in 75, which was kind of an up-and-down season. But Sadecki would only have 8 appearances with the Cardinals, and he would actually get traded twice in the middle of the 75 season, from the Cardinals to the Braves, and then in September from the Braves to the Kansas City Royals. So 3 teams in 75 for Sadecki before spending 76 with the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers released Sadecki at the conclusion of the 76 season, and he requested and received a spring training invitation from his former team, the Mets. They were looking for a left-handed specialist in the bullpen, and Sadecki was still very popular in the New York clubhouse, so his former teammates were happy to have him back, although it was sadly a brief reunion. Sadecki would make 4 final appearances in a Met uniform, making his final major league appearance on April 23rd, 1977, against the Pirates. He would take the loss. He would come into a 5-5 game in the top of the ninth and surrender a triple to Omar Moreno. He would almost pitch out of it, getting a pop fly and a ground out before Al Oliver delivered a 2-out RBI single to break the 5-5 tie. The Mets would get a rally going against the Pirates' Goose Gossage in the bottom of the ninth, but couldn't get Sadecki off the hook. And so on April 23rd, 1977, in front of a reported attendance of 9,040 people at Shea Stadium, Ray Sadecki made what would be his final Major League Baseball appearance. As Sadecki said of his last Major League season, at the end of his career, "I was cheap help for the Mets, $25,000, and by the time the Mets released me, I didn't even try to find something else. My arm was healthy, but I was done. I said goodbye, and I had no gripes." For his Major League Baseball career, Sadecki had a record of 135 and 131, 3.78 ERA. He pitched 22,500 and one-third Major League innings. Walked 922, struck out 1,614, surrendered 2,456 hits. So 3.78 ERA, 1.351 WHIP. He appeared in 563 games. 328 of those were starts. He only recorded 7 career saves. He was more of a long man, middle reliever. 7 major regular season saves. He did have 1 save, less memorable than I thought it might be, in Game 4 of the 73 World Series against the A's. According to Baseball References similarity scores, some of the more similar pitchers to him in his career include Floyd Bannister, Rudy May, and actually a number 7 on the list, Ron Darling, which I thought was kind of interesting and a little surprising to me. Slightly different routes, I guess, to somewhat similar numbers. Sadecki was out of baseball and just working for an office supply company for about 13 years until he became a minor league coach and instructor in both the Cubs and Giants organization in the early 90s, left the Giants after the baseball strike in 94 and kind of went back into, I'm just going to call it private life, I guess, a non-baseball life. He had a son who played baseball at Vanderbilt and made it up to AAA in the Rangers organization, but didn't quite make the majors, as well as a daughter. He divorced in 1990 and sadly passed away on November 17, 2014, at the age of 73 from complications of blood cancer. Popular with Met fans for his flexibility and his effectiveness out of the bullpen, very popular with his teammates, where he overcame an early and perhaps undeserved reputation as a malcontent to be a beloved bullpen veteran presence, and with some memorable personal milestones and World Series moments for the New York Mets, Ray Sadecki, truly unformidable. Thank you for listening to Unformidable. Please go to AmazonAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow us on all of your social medias. And you can find this podcast and all of Amazing Avenue's Truly Amazing Pods wherever you get your podcasts. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, and the show is at Unformatable. Thank you, and as always, let's go Mets.